Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinatha Nikanda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Rinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Pushtaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nuse Sisindavani Paskutyade Satam.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
We are very honored, very fortunate. Urmila Mataji. Mataji is born and brought up in New York. She joined ISKCON in Chicago in 1973, and for the last 50 years she has been serving in Shri Prabhupada movement all over the world. She and her husband, they are in Vanaprastha order since 1996. She has 3 children and 13 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. One grandson.
Yes, Devesha.
He has also come with Mataji. She is a PhD in educational leadership. She has served as a primary and secondary teacher for 27 years and has 19 years of experience with school management. She has also served as a book distributor, assistant secretary for the PPT, as a pujari, as a temple cook, as an actress, as a writer and editor. Her primary service has been in the area of education. She has helped start the Grastha Vision team. Like few months back we saw Parthu Tam Mataji have come and they gave so many seminars on Grastha training programs. She had been instrumental in developing those programs. She is also chair of Shastric Advisory Council, which gives advice to GBC on many Shastric matters. She is also active, she has been active member of ISKCON's International Board of Education, which is involved in awarding Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vaibhav, all these courses to devotees around the world. She continues to develop and teach local, national and international seminars for trainers, educators and managers, which include wide variety of spiritual and practical subjects. She is also a feature writer, and for 30 years she has been an associate editor for Back to Godhead magazine, which is backbone of our ISKCON movement. And she has published many books like Krishna Meditations, Essence Seeker, Vaikuntha Children, a guidebook for devotional education, The Great Mantra for Mystic Meditation, dozens of articles, and Dr. Best Learn to Read. So that is 83 books. It is a very elaborate, complete literacy program with technology embedded in it. It is a special thing. You just touch and it speaks in 25 different languages, and you can learn Krishna conscious things and also things. So Mataji, while he travels around the world, teaching the message of Krishna and also training the teachers and training the leaders. Just when I was in Vrindavan, I saw many devotees. I heard appreciating her seminar on career dharma, and the devotees from later on I met some devotees in Puri, where from Pune and Bombay and different places. So they were also talking about how they were so inspired by her workshop which she did. So we are very honored and very fortunate to get her association here today. First time she is spending time in Calcutta, and we are so honored to welcome her. So let us welcome her to Calcutta, birthplace of Srila Prabhupada, by loudly chanting 3 times.
Haribo! 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 Haribo!
Thank you. Hare Krishna. I'm here because I was actually invited by the BRC people, and they've been inviting me for years and years and years. Only other time I was in Calcutta was when Harisari brought me to them. to the BRC years ago, and I just spent one night at the BRC. I've never like seen Kolkata at all. Anyway, so Balaram Lila Prabhu invited me. He was inviting me, you must come. Finally, I said, okay, I booked the ticket. And then, like, a week ago, he said, oh, but now we're renovating. We have no place to put you, and we can't take care of you anymore. He said, don't come. I said, I already have my ticket. So now I am here. Not a good night. Somehow Krishna wanted me here. So this is November 28th, 2023 in Newtown Temple in Kolkata. What do you call your temple here?
Newtown.
Just Newtown. Okay. And I'm going to tell you that the verses we're covering today are some of my favorite verses. So I was very excited to see them. That was first time I've ever given a class on these verses. So it's very exciting. So we're going to be doing 31 through 40. And what verse is on the board?
40.
40, okay. And everybody's okay with English? English is good?
How many of you can understand English? Raise hands.
Okay. Am I speaking slowly enough, or do I need to speak more slowly?
Okay.
It's okay? As he said, I'm from New York. We speak very fast. So if I speak too fast, just tell me to just go like this, and I will slow down, okay? No, seriously. I'm being very serious. If I say something you don't understand, would you please ask?
Yes.
Yes? This is my agreement here.
Yes.
Okay? If you think she has said something crazy, please ask. All right? So I think here I'll just read the English. Okay, so we're starting, this is Jarasandha speaking, and you all know the background, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So, but I will not fight with you, Krishna, for you are a coward. Your strength abandoned you in the midst of battle, and you fled your own capital of Mathura to take shelter in the sea. Text 32. As for this one, Arjuna, he is not as old as I, nor is he very strong. Since he is no match for me, he should not be the contender. Bhima, however, is as strong as I am. So this is a very important point in dharmic dueling or dharmic battle, that you only fight against someone who's equal, because the idea of this duel is that whoever won the duel would be the winner. There wouldn't have to be a war. And now dueling is illegal in the world, but it would be nice to bring it back. We could just have, you know, what's his name? Netanyahu and the head of Hamas, they could just have a duel, you know? And then, or Putin and what's the Ukrainian
name?
Zelensky. And Putin, can you imagine, they just go out with clubs and a duel, and then whole thing's finished, and you don't have to bomb the cities and everything. But there's rules for this. And in general, the rule is that competition should be between equals. That way the competition is decided, the result is decided by God, by the devas, and there's not something exploitive. And in modern warfare, it's not like this, correct? They are bombing the civilians. Of course, even sometimes in the Bhagavatam, like Shalva is attacking the whole city of Dwarka. You follow?
Yeah.
It wasn't on a battlefield. He was attacking the civilians. Same with the airships that Lord Shiva destroyed. They were also attacking all of the people of the planet without discrimination. And of course, we have Asvatthama, who was also killing sleeping people and attacking a baby in the womb. So we had also a dharmic fighting sometimes going on in ancient times. But it's interesting that Jarasandha is a demon, and still he has some pride that I follow the rules of combat. Yeah, I follow the dharmic rules. Having said this, Jarasandha offered Bhimasen a huge club, took up another himself, and went outside the city. So he even gives his opponent a weapon. The two heroes thus began battling each other on the level fighting grounds outside the city. Maddened, and this is outside, so they're not hurting anybody else. Maddened with the fury of combat, they struck each other with their lightning bolt-like clubs. As they skillfully circled left and right, like actors dancing on a stage, the fight presented a magnificent spectacle. BBT Purport, Jarasandha and Bhima here demonstrate their expertise in the use of clubs. Thus it can be understood that both fighters were fearless and steady, even in the rage of battle. So this will be an important point. We'll talk about this expertise. Text 36. When Jarasandha's and Bhima's clubs loudly collided, O king, the sound was like the impact of the big tusks of two fighting elephants or the crash of a thunderbolt in a flashing electrical storm. BBT Purport, this translation is based on Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. Text 37, they swung their clubs. Now, this is actually an incredible verse. Almost unbelievable. They swung their clubs at each other with such speed and force that as the clubs struck their shoulders, hips, feet, hands, thighs, and collarbones, and I noticed they're fighting at the thighs. So what was crushed? Were their bones crushed? Did it break the bones? Look what happened. The weapons were crushed and broken. How is that possible? Like branches of arca trees with which two enraged elephants furiously attack each other. What kind of bodies did they have? Yeah. I mean, we know Bhima, he has an amazing body. First of all, he's the son of Vayu. And even his mother's not completely human, you know. She's part Naga. So he doesn't have a human body. And then you know when Duryodhana tried to poison him, the Nagas revived him, and when they revived him, their way of reviving him made him stronger. You all know this story?
Yeah.
So Bhima, he's not like a human. Because ordinary human, if you're going to take a club and hit their bodies will break, not that the club breaks. And Jarasandha wasn't an ordinary human either, right? He was born from two mothers in two pieces, and he was joined by a witch. So he didn't have a regular body. But, I mean, this is actually astonishing that the weapons are breaking. Right? Someone shoots you with a gun, and instead of the bullet going through you, the gun explodes. You know? Okay, 38, their clubs thus ruined. Those great heroes among men angrily pummeled each other with their iron-hard fists. As they slapped each other, the sound resembled the crash of elephants colliding or harsh thunderclaps. So we still have these metaphors. And their fists must have been very... If their bodies could break clubs, metal clubs. So imagine how strong their fists were. I don't know why they make all these movies about like Superman and Batman, and we should have these. Yes?
Yes.
The real superheroes. So this is text 39. As they thus fought, this contest between opponents of equal training, strength, and stamina reached no conclusion. And so they kept on fighting, O king, without any let up. So this is BBT Purport. Some acharyas include the following two verses in the text of this chapter, and Srila Prabhupada has also translated them in Krishna. So just a little note about this statement that we just read. How do we know that our shastras are bona fide? This is a very important question. Just like you may know the New Testament of the Bible, it was compiled over 100 years after the death of Lord Jesus Christ. And it was compiled by different church elders. Very difficult to say that it actually is telling us anything accurate. You follow? But we have a similar problem with a lot of the Puranas and the Vedic literatures. that we don't really know how much of them has been changed and how much is accurate, and this is extremely important. But how do we know the Bhagavatam is accurate? Because there's been over 81 commentaries on the Bhagavatam, and in their commentaries, they cite the shlokas, and they're citing the same shlokas. So that's our evidence that the Bhagavatam has remained unchanged. Whereas many parts of the Vedic literature, nobody's commented on them at all. And so we will use from the Vedic literatures those shlokas that are quoted by our acharyas. But we should be extremely careful about parts of the Vedic literatures where there has been no commentaries and no quoting by our acharyas. Otherwise, we will be subject legitimately to the same criticism that we can make of others. You follow? Now, sometimes there are variant versions of the Bhagavatam. But you will notice that whenever that is the case, Srila Prabhupada will note that. And here there's a note like that, that there's a variant version of the Bhagavatam that has these two verses. And so in many of the 81 commentaries, these two verses are also quoted, and Srila Prabhupada accepts them, and because of that, we also accept them. But the BBT editors decided, instead of putting them in as verses, they were going to put them in a purport, because some editions of the Bhagavatam don't have them. All right, so let's look at the Sanskrit here. Evam tayor maharaja yudyato saptavim sati dinani niragams tatra suridvan nishitushtato ekadamotileyam vai praharajam vikodara na shaktoham jarasandam nirjetam yudimadava. So these last two lines, Nashaktoham Jarasandam Nirjaitam Yudhimadava, is how I wrote the 83 book Learn to Read series, by meditating on those two lines and one line from the next verse. So how does Srila Prabhupada translate this? Thus, O King, they continue to fight for 27 days, so almost one lunar month. Remember who else was fighting for this long? Excellent. At the end of each day's fighting, both lived at night as friends in Jarasandha's palace. So this was also the standard for dharmic fighting. Wouldn't that be nice if we did that in modern warfare also? Ceasefire every night and then everybody had prasadam together or something. Then on the 28th day, O King Vikodara Bhima told his maternal cousin Madhava, I cannot defeat Jarasandar in battle. And what did he say exactly? Na shaktoham. He says, I don't have the
power.
Na shaktoham Jarasandam nir jetam. I cannot be victorious, yudhi, in battle, O Madhava. Okay, text 40 we'll say together. Shatra janmar mriti vidvan.
Shatra janmar mriti vidvan.
Jivitam cha jarakritam.
Jivitam cha jarakritam.
Artam apyayam swena.
Artam apyayam swena.
Tejasa chinchaya dhari.
Tejasa chinchaya dhari.
Shatro. Of the enemy.
Of the enemy.
Janma.
Janma.
The birth.
The birth.
Mriti.
Mriti.
And death.
And death.
Vidvan.
Vidvan.
Knowing.
Jivitam,
the bringing to life,
the bringing to life.
Cha.
Cha,
and
Jara,
by the demon is Jara,
Kritam,
done,
Partham,
Bhima, the son of Krita,
Abhyayayam,
empowering, Svena,
with his own,
Tejasa, potency, Achinchayat,
thought,
Harihi, Lord Krishna. ABT translation. Lord Krishna knew the secret of his enemy Jarasandha's birth and death, and also how he had been given life by the demonish Jara. Considering all this, Lord Krishna imparted his special power to Bhima. ABT purport. Srila Prabhupada writes that Lord Krishna, quote, knew the mystery, this is from Krishna book, knew the mystery of the birth of Jarasandha. Jatasanya was born in two different parts from two different mothers. When his father saw that the baby was useless, he threw the two parts into the forest, where they were later found by a black-hearted witch named Jara. She managed to join the two parts of the baby from top to bottom. Knowing this, Lord Krishna therefore also knew how to kill him. So here we have Bhima doing his best, failing, and then Krishna. What does Krishna do? Empowers him. So we all want to be successful, yes? Anybody want to be a failure? Everybody wants to be a success. So I want to look here at what is the progression. What happens here in this progression? And then I want to look at our part and Krishna's part. And then if we have time, I will tell you the story of how I spent, bless you, 3 years meditating on these verses to write a literacy program. So what's the progression here? So first there was a plan worked out together of how to deal with Jarasandha. And this was over some time. We have the messenger from the kings comes to the assembly house, and then there's the going. It was a whole long thing, which we could also talk about, how long the kings had to wait, and then Krishna going to Indraprastha. Was it Indraprastha or Hastinapur?
Indraprastha.
And with his whole retinue, all his 16,108 queens and all of their children and all of their teachers and all of the people to do the laundry and all of the servants. And they all go to Indraprastha, and then there's the challenge horses that are sent out by the younger four Pandava brothers, and everyone either gets defeated or pays tribute except for Jarasandha. And then there's this plan that they would go in disguise as Brahmanas. Yes? Which, of course, the Pandavas had a lot of experience being in disguise as Brahmanas. So this was a plan, and it was worked out by Krishna with the devotees. It wasn't just worked out by the devotees, and it wasn't just worked out by Krishna. It was worked out as a consultative plan between Krishna and the devotees. All right, and then they go, and then Jarasandha agrees to fight with Bhima, which is what they had expected. And we find then Bhima uses his strength and his expertise. He's not only so strong that his bones break metal clubs that are being hurled at him by a similarly strong opponent, but also he's very expert. We had this verse about how they looked like they were dancing. If you've ever seen a martial arts demonstration, yeah? There's this wonderful devotee, Dinandayal Prabhu, who has traveled with Indrajumna Swami for many years, and he does a martial arts exhibition. Incredible, wonderful, wonderful devotee. And they do it like a dance. It looks like a dance. Of course, this was a very serious dance. They were actually trying to kill each other. But so he's actually expert. And he tries for enough time. He doesn't just try for a minute or two. He tries for 27 days. So he really makes a full effort. He doesn't just say, oh, I can't do it, he's too strong, the clubs are breaking, right? And after 27 days, what he does is he said, I can't do it. I don't have the Shakti. Which, of course, was amazing because he was considered the strongest person on the planet at that time. And then Krishna empowers him. Now, you could say, and then in the next verses, Krishna will give him a hint also. He empowers him with his tejas, and then he gives him a hint with the grass, and then the objective is achieved. Now, you could say, of course, that Krishna empowered him in the beginning because Krishna was standing right there. Isn't that interesting? I find this particular pastime fascinating and of great relevance to us at every moment in our lives with everything we are trying to do, whether it's when we wake up in the morning or how we chant our japa or whether or not we build a goshala or anything we do, is very much relevant to this particular pastime and how the Lord is working with his devotees in this progression. Before we go on, I would just like to mention, are devotees always externally successful in their endeavors?
No.
So just do bear that in mind, and I'll ask you to think of some examples when that was the case. All right, so I want to look at what is our part and what is Krishna's part. So what is our part? Well, first, Bhima is available. He's making himself available to do the will of the Lord. He's making himself open. And then he has some expertise in something. He has something to offer. When Srila Prabhupada was speaking in Mumbai in 1976 about the Brahmachari Ashram from the seventh canto, and he was going back and forth between talking about Gurukula and the temple Brahmachari Ashrams. He was conflating them, that the Gurukulas we have for the children and teenagers and the Brahmachari Ashrams we have for the adult men. Prabhupada was making them the same. And one of the points he made is that the devotee should be daksha. That is one of the 26 qualities of a devotee. Is my speed okay?
Yes.
And Srila Prabhupada says that devotees should not be callous toward material knowledge and the material world. So sometimes we think like this, and I know with our Gurukulas, you know, when Prabhupada was here on the planet with us, most of our children were very, very young. We didn't really have practically any children above the age of 10. Most of them were like 5, 6, 7. And Prabhupada would say things like, just let them learn a little Sanskrit and English, they don't need to learn so many things. And people were thinking this applies to when they're 14. But Prabhupada said the devotee should be expert. They should not be callous. And he was talking about Gurukula and the Brahmacharis. They should not be callous to material knowledge. And he said they should know something of everything and everything of something. Something of everything and everything of something. That we should become daksha, we should become expert. As Srila Prabhupada also writes in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, that Gurukul was for training in higher values of life, along with specific training for a livelihood. So the majority of students in the Gurukul, of course, would marry and go on to be in one of the varnas, where they would have to have a specific career, they would have to have a specific training. But even those brahmacharis who never marry, who, as far as in the seventh canto, go on to the vanaprastha ashram, still they should have some expertise. And we see devotees like this. I think about Gauranga Prabhu. He's so expert. Yes? So one should be expert in something. Otherwise, what do you have to offer? Yes, like one devotee wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, your eternally useless servant. If we're going to say, how may I serve you? How may I serve you? What service can I do? We have to be able to offer something, yes? I mean, it's nice to know how to sweep the floor and how to wash the pots, but even that requires some expertise, isn't it? Yes? I have seen bathroom cleaners, they just take a bucket with some disinfectant and they just throw it in the bathroom and they say, now it's clean. And I'm like, that's not cleaning. Yeah? Even that one has to acquire some expertise. Sometimes we have a view in the Hare Krishna movement that if you just chant 16 rounds and wake up early and eat prasadam, that you can do anything without training. That's not true. And they'll say, well, Krishna will empower you. Krishna does empower Bhima. But Bhima also worked at becoming expert. Prabhupada would say, Krishna did not say, Arjuna, you sleep on the chariot, and I'll just fight for you. Many years ago, pre-internet, there was this regular devotee magazine, I forget what it was called, like different news of different temples. And at the end of it, they had what we call personal ads. Do you know what that is? Like people looking for someone to marry. Now that it's done all online matching. So this one man wrote, he said, my favorite service is to sleep and dream of doing service. What woman is going to want a husband like this? What do you do? I lie on the couch and I dream I am making money. You know? So this is not... I mean, if you actually have no capacity, like that Brahmana who is poor and he's meditating on bathing Krishna with a gold pot and a silver pot, if you actually don't have the capacity, the Prabhupada would always say, the rich man cannot just offer one little flower. Right? So the point is that we have to become expert. We should become expert in something. And then we should use our expertise in service according to our nature. So you were talking about this. We've come out with this book, Dr. Ruchira Dutta and I, Career Dharma. It's about the Varna part of Varnashram. And it is very important, the essence, if you want to boil down what is the essence of the Varnashram system, it is, especially the Varna part, your guna and your karma should match. You understand? The work you do should be according to your nature, and you should not do others' work. How many times does Krishna say in the Gita, you should not do others' work? Twice. He says, if you do others' work, your work becomes bhayavaha. It becomes a vehicle of fear for yourself and for others. So we develop some expertise, and except for brief emergencies, we use our nature, we use that expertise in service. And then we also work with our authorities. This whole plan for killing Jarasandhar, it wasn't just Bhima's idea out of the sky. It was a consultative process among the first in Dwarka, then in Indraprastha, how they were going to kill Jarasandhar. And I think this point is also very important. Sometimes Krishna or Guru just orders. Sometimes. You go do this. Sometimes. But other times, Guru and Krishna also discuss with the devotees. You follow? I mean, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur called Krishna a transcendental autocrat. But that doesn't mean that he's always just simply giving orders and we are just like a computer. You don't have a discussion with your computer because it's a machine. But with another human being, there should be some give and take. Now, in different cultures, this is done differently. Yes? How different groups reach consensus and discuss varies between one culture and another. But this is supposed to be a relationship between the devotee and Krishna. And sometimes people think that it's superior if Krishna gives an order and we follow, rather than if the idea comes from us, but that's not true. Just like if you're working in a business, the president of the business, if they're good, they will be very happy if you come with a suggestion for improvement. Oh, I have a suggestion how we could make more money, how we could make a better product. The best companies, they have some facility like that for the workers, the various workers, to give their input. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Yes? Because they are right there. They are right there dealing with the customer, or they are right there making the product, and they will have insight. Also, people are going to be more enthused if they have some input. So we should be active participants in the service. We're persons, we're alive, not just robots. And we should be in a state of surrender. So this is a very interesting point, and we could speak about this probably for several classes. There's a wonderful letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Jaipataka Maharaj where he talks about the secret of surrender. And he lists, you can analyze it as 4 or 5 points. The first is that everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. I may not be getting the words exactly right, but Prabhupada's English was a little charming. So at every moment, if I am in the mood of a surrendered servant, then I will see at every moment I have some service to do as a servant. I have service in this moment, in this moment, in this moment, in this moment, in this moment. Understanding this has become very popular in the world today. Generally, under the influence of Buddhism, they call it mindfulness and present moment awareness. To be in the moment. But Prabhupada's talking about how this is a key feature of surrender, and we see this with Bhima and Jarasandha. That even though they're trying to kill each other, they're very absorbed in doing their expert skills and crafts in that moment. Then the next point Prabhupada makes is there should be full attention to every detail. It doesn't matter what service you're doing. It doesn't matter, Prabhupada says, what the service is. Full attention to every detail, no matter what it is. Whether you're serving Khitri, whether you're addressing the deities, whether you are cleaning the toilet, whether you are taking care of Tulsi, whether you are editing, whatever it is, full attention to every detail, no matter what the service is. And then he says that one should be fully absorbed in that service. Fully absorbed. And then he says, and all other considerations be forgotten. So modern psychiatrists, sociologists, have analyzed what Srila Prabhupada's talking about, and they call it flow. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
Yeah? There was Mikkeli Csikszentmihalyi, I think is his name, and he wrote this very best-selling book about flow. And this is exactly what he describes. You have some expertise in something, you're matching your expertise to the job, just like this fight. You have a challenge that equals your ability, but maybe a little bit higher. You're absorbed in every detail. You're completely absorbed in what you're doing, and you forget about everything else. And you enter into a state that I would say is very much like what we describe as samadhi. What fascinates me is that a materialistic person can somewhat enter into this state even when being absorbed in materialistic activities. So if we're going to take just the middle part of Srila Prabhupada's instructions, paying attention to the detail and being absorbed and forgetting everything else, the materialist can do that. But the first part, that what I'm doing is part of Krishna's plan, always. You know how sometimes when we're doing something, we're thinking, let me get this done so I can do something else? That's exactly the opposite of the mood of surrender. The mood of surrender is whatever I'm doing in this moment, in the now, 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 in the now. What being absorbed in the now, in the now, in the now, in the now, in the now does is it automatically detaches you from the result. And the last point that Prabhupada makes and Krishna's, my desire is only to please Krishna. That is my only motive. And to please Krishna when? In the now, in the now, in the now, in the now, in the now. When we work like that, the end result is no different from each moment of the process. I am fully absorbed in whatever I am doing at the moment, seeing that this is my service and I am a servant, and just trying to please Krishna and forgetting about everything else. And Prabhupada said, this is the secret of surrender. When a person is in this consciousness, they will experience life with a thrill at every moment. If a materialistic person finds joy being in this state without the two end pieces of Krishna has engaged me and I'm doing it just for Krishna's pleasure, why are they feeling some joy? Because they're in sattva. If you're just in the moment and you're paying attention to every detail and you forget about everything else, you'll go into sattva. But this other brings us to bhakti. And if we live like this, we are naturally detached from honor and dishonor, fame and infamy, happiness, distress, success, failure, friends, enemies. What is the result? The result that we're attached to is I'm connecting with Krishna now. And I'm trying to please him now. And I'm trying to please him now. And then, even if there is a failure, it's been a success. Do you understand? So can you give me some examples now of failures? What some great devotees that apparently failed as far as the result? Srila Prabhupada in League of Devotees in Jhansi. By the way, are we happy that Srila Prabhupada failed in Jhansi?
Yes.
I'm happy that Prabhupada failed in Jhansi. I don't know about all of you, but I'm really, really, thank you, Krishna, that Srila Prabhupada failed in Jhansi and that he came to America. Hare Krishna. What are some other examples? Jatayu. One of my favorite examples. Actually, I was watching the Ramayana in New York in 1976, a play, a drama, the Ramayana. I was sitting two rows behind Srila Prabhupada, and Loka Mangala was playing Ravana, Devadeva was playing Jatayu, and Rasikyao was playing Sita. Prabhupada said she was the best actress in the world, and her husband was playing Ram. So there was, especially that scene when Jatayu comes and he challenges Ravana. And when Sita says, Jatayu, no! You are too old, and he is much stronger than you. Somehow, when Rasikya Sita said those lines, and I was sitting behind Srila Prabhupada, I wasn't anymore in the theater of the New York temple, but I was in the Dandaka forest in the Leela for about probably 2 or 3 minutes. And so that particular part of the Ramayana has always really struck me. Jatayu, and Jatayu fails, yes? He fails. Of course, he succeeds at telling Ram that it was Ravana who took Sita and that they went south. So that was something. But still, he failed to stop them. But was he a success?
Yes.
Absolutely. My other favorite is the cowherd men who failed to stop the cows from running down Govardhan Hill. And you've all seen Govardhan Hill, I assume? Everyone's been to Govardhan? Can you imagine running down the hill? They're not goats, you know, they're cows. And they're running. They really wanted to see their calves, who were actually Krishna. And it says the cowherd men felt frustrated and angry and bewildered because they're pure devotees and they're normally successful. They couldn't understand why they were a failure. But we're also glad that they were a failure. Their failure demonstrated how much love these cows had for their calves, who were actually Krishna, right? They were willing to run down these very huge rocks of Govardhan Hill. So sometimes there's external failures, but the devotees are always, they're actually always successful. And no lethargy, as Krishna says in 3:30, no jwara, not laziness, not, oh, it's hard. Bhima doesn't get lazy, does he? I would have gotten lazy, wouldn't you? 27 days? Would you have tried for 27 days? But he tried 27 days, and he was getting nowhere. His clubs were breaking. Imagine that. I mean, after that would happen to me, I'd say, Krishna, my club's broken. I didn't break his shoulder, I broke my club. But no, not lethargy. He didn't give up. All right, what does Krishna do? So Krishna reveals his mission, his desire. This is not a secret. What does Krishna want? People ask me all the time. What does Krishna want? I'm like, have you read the Shastra? He's not shy about saying what he wants. What is his mission? What is his overall mission? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I'm just starting Chaitanya Charitamrita again. And Lord Chaitanya's mission is very clear. What is it that he wants? Srila Prabhupada gives the 7 purposes of ISKCON. It's very clear. I was working with a group of North American leaders in the last couple years, and we put together a booklet of what the world would look like if these 7 purposes of ISKCON were fulfilled. We did a visioning exercise. So what Srila Prabhupada wants is very clear. What our acharyas wanted, it's not some kind of a secret. What is their desire? So Krishna reveals his desire. And then Krishna sends help. He sends guru, he sends sadhu, he has the shastras. He doesn't just leave us. No, there's no one to guide me, there's no one to help me. Yes? Now this is also very interesting. Krishna relishes our efforts. So some of you, how many of you have studied Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Oh, very nice. So You may know that in the Viraras, there's four subcategories, yes, of the Viraras. And one Viraras is this fighting. We tend to think that's the only thing, but there's also a Dharma Viraras and Dhana Viraras. Yeah. So this fighting, Srila Rupa Goswami explains, okay, I'm going to ask you, two subcategories, two sub-subcategories of the subcategory of fighting under the Viraras category. This is a very hard question. Anyone who knows this should get a Maha Suite. So what are the two sub-subcategories of the Yuda Vira category of Vira Ras? Hint, one of them is happening in this pastime. Oh, good guess, but sorry. But thank you for trying. Huh? How do devotees experience the Yudhavira Ras, of the Yudhavira subcategory of the Vira Ras with Krishna? How do the devotees and Krishna get pleasure from the Yudhavira, the fighting Ras, part of the Vira Ras? One of them's happening in this pastime. Okay, one of them happens between Krishna and the cowherd boys, and sometimes Krishna and the Pandavas. What are they doing? They're fighting with Krishna. Yes, sometimes they defeat Krishna, sometimes Krishna defeats them. They're fighting with Krishna. What's happening in this pastime? Is anyone fighting with Krishna? What's happening? Krishna is doing what?
Observing.
So when the devotee is fighting and Krishna is observing, that's the other type of Yudhavira Rasa under the Vira Rasa category. So you have Vira Rasa, then you have Yudhavira, you have Dhanavira, you have, what is his name? Krishna. Dayavira, and then you have Dharmavira. You have those four subcategories. And of the Yudhavira, you have the two. When you're fighting with Krishna, and when you're fighting to entertain Krishna. Yeah? Sometimes even the bulls do that. They're fighting and Krishna's entertained by watching them. But if they get too aggressive, he separates them. So is Krishna enjoying Bhima fighting?
Yes.
Definitely. And I'm sure it was enjoyable. You could probably sell tickets for a lot of money. See the fighters who break the weapons, you know. Their bones break. So Krishna was also, Krishna enjoys, my dear friends, Krishna enjoys our efforts. Even when we're struggling. I'm going to repeat this. Krishna is enjoying our efforts even when we're struggling. Do we sometimes feel like it's a fight with Maya? Prabhupada would sometimes say like that, right? Do we sometimes feel like we're losing or we're not getting anywhere? But Krishna's saying, oh, this is a good fight. Where Prabhupada was working so hard to get the temple in Juhu. How many years he's fighting with Mr. Nair? And Prabhupada wrote that letter. Everybody will go back to Godhead except Mr. Nair. I'm sure Krishna was enjoying that. You follow? Krishna's watching. Wow. Krishna also likes a good story. You understand? Prabhupada says in the pastime with Jarasandhar that Krishna has all the propensities of a living being. Do we like a good story?
Yes.
How much of the entertainment industry is about a good fight between the good guys and the bad guys? Is that a lot?
Yes.
I don't know how many movies and books, but it must be a lot. And people are paying a lot of money to go watch the good guys and the bad guys fighting. So Krishna also enjoys. I was just reading, one of my godbrothers was sharing how they had gone out and distributed a whole lot of books during a Christmas marathon one year. And during that during that time in Chicago Airport that some people came and punched some devotees in the face, and the police were called, and the police arrested some of the devotees. And Prabhupada was enjoying how the devotees were sacrificing to distribute books. He was just saying, look how serious they are, that they're willing to go out and fight even. Don't think that Krishna doesn't care when we're making an effort, even if we appear to be unsuccessful. Krishna also does his part, if we let him, if we are available, to keep us happily engaged according to our nature. Krishna wants to engage us according to our expertise and our nature and our desires. That's very much what he would like. He would like us to be happy. And Krishna will set up different... He says this in the third chapter, the Bhagavad Gita, when he talks about yajna, that when one performs yajna, that is for living happily and attaining liberation. So if we are available and we try to become expert in something, then Krishna will do his part to engage us in that. And then, apyayam swena tejasa, he fills us with his potency, and as you'll see in the verse you'll read tomorrow, he also will give us hints. He doesn't even say anything, he just takes the grasp. So this is the beautiful relationship between the devotee and the Lord. So should I tell you my story? Okay. So I was a Gurukul teacher for decades, 27 years altogether, and I really wanted to write curriculum because we didn't have devotional materials. It's hard to teach subjects devotionally when you don't have devotional materials. And I was thinking all the time, I want to retire from teaching so that I can produce material. So finally I did that. But I already at that point had a PhD in education, but I had never designed a literacy program. I'd used them, but I hadn't designed them. I hadn't created them. So I really didn't know where to begin. And this devotee first paid for me to get some training at the Institute of Education, which is the government program in the UK, the top literacy program actually in the world. And they gave me some training. And then I was very fortunate. I was given shelter in New Zealand by the temple in the Gurukula, a beautiful house by the ocean where I could just write. I could see the cows and these birds called pukiko birds, which are not very nice birds. And this one devotee, Dwarka Puri, there was a literacy expert, and she connected me with Beverly Randall of a huge publishing house. So they were also giving me a lot of help. And so I got a framework, but it was extremely difficult work. I'd say it was intellectually, it was the most difficult work that I've ever done. And as the chair of the Shastric Advisory Council, we produce 175-page papers that are the combined work of 18 scholars. And if you have any idea what it's like to work with 18 scholars and get them to produce something to which they all agree. And I'm telling you that writing these books for children was much harder. So because each book had to adhere to many, many different parameters. So like the first book, it could only use 20 words. And you could only have 8 sentences. And you could only have certain kinds of punctuation marks. But it had to be a story with a beginning, middle, and end. And it had to be about Krishna. And it had to be interesting for children. It's almost impossible. And each book, you had to have the new words that you were teaching, plus you had to have words from the previous book, and you couldn't have any patterns that you hadn't taught. And it was extremely difficult. I'll give you an example. Like when I was writing the book on Agasura, I used the word huge, H-U-G-E, because I was teaching in that book, U consonant E makes the sound U rather than A. But what I didn't realize is that I hadn't yet taught that when G is followed by E, it makes the sound J instead of G. I hadn't taught the soft G sound. And so by putting in the word huge, I had introduced a particular configuration of letters and sounds that the children hadn't been taught yet. I didn't notice it. Someone else said, wait a minute, did we teach G-E as J? I'm like, oops. I can't use that word. And then I had a list of 15 or 20 different rules for each level of difficulty. How many sentences could be in the story? How many sentences per page? What had to be the grammatical construction of the sentences? Again, the punctuation, how it had to relate to the story. It was extremely complicated. And then the experts I was talking with said, it's got to be fun. The children have to be the heroes. You know, it has to be a real story with a real challenge. And I'm like, so I would work on it and fail. At every book, I would work on it and fail. And I would work on it and fail. I'd get into the middle of a story and I couldn't finish it with the words that I could use and the patterns that I could use. And I'd work for a few hours and then I would take a long Japa walk. And then I'd work again for a few hours. And then I would take another long Japa walk. And then I'd work for a few hours. And then I would read Shastra. And then I'd work for a few hours and I'd take some prasadam and I would start the next day. And I would just fail and fail and fail and fail and fail. And when I had tried everything I could possibly try, I went to my Thakurji Giriraj and I said, Nashakto hanjara sandam nirjetam yudhi madhava apyayam swain itajasa. And then I could write it. And that happened all but two times. If I tried to say this prayer at the beginning, Krishna would be like, nope. You got to fight for 27 days with your expertise. I mean, it wouldn't usually take me 20. I usually give up after 3 or 5 days. Should I tell you about the 2 times when that didn't happen?
Yes.
So 2 times when it didn't happen, I was in the temple. I'd gone to Mangalartik, and I was sitting chanting japa, and I was just chanting my japa, and all of a sudden at 6 in the morning, the whole book came finished in my mind. That's our book about being a vegetarian. A chicken is food for a cat. And that's the only book I get criticized for. The meat eaters who look at the program say, we don't like this book. I'm like, sorry, Krishna wrote that one. So that was just, that whole book came to me all at once before I even started working on that level. And the other one was 7 Things for Krishna. As I started with my first attempt at that level and I was typing, I didn't even know where the story was going and the story just unfolded as I wrote it. And whenever I read that story, every time now, I still cry when I read that. It was about a 7-year-old girl who says to her father, it's my birthday, and I'm going to be 7 today, and I want to give Krishna 7 things. And so they talk about what she's going to give. I'm going to clean the temple, and I'm going to sing a song, and I'm going to dance, and I'm going to bring some fruit, and I'm going to bring some cloth. And her father says, that's only 6 things. What will be your 7th thing? She doesn't know. So they go to the temple and they do all this service and her father says, it's time to go home. She says, but I've only given 6 things. And he says, but we have to go home. And she says, I know what I will give for the 7th thing. And what does she give? What's her last thing that she gives? Herself. That I did not write that story. I mean, it came through my fingers, but I did not write that story. So those two I didn't write, and they came immediately. I didn't have to struggle. I didn't have to fight with Jarasandhar. But all the others I had to fight with Jarasandhar. And it was also very interesting when I was working on that program. I had practically no savings and I had no income. I had no team. I mean, I had a nice place to work, watching the ocean tides and the cows and the cuckoo crow birds, just me and my computer. I never knew if it would get published. I had no idea if there would ever be any external result. But I really meditated on this particular pastime of Bhima and Jarasandhar. And should I tell you one more thing about that? So I thought, well, I don't know if this will ever be. I'm hoping this will help you in your own service. That's why I'm telling you this story. That whatever you do, maybe you can use these principles. So I had no idea if it would ever actually happen. You follow? I mean, I had published books before, but not like this, not like with a regular publishing company and big. So I had no idea. And I didn't have connections in the publishing industry. I didn't even at that point know artists. I didn't have anything. And I thought, well, this may never actually get off my computer. You know? So I thought, let me do two things. Let me fight like Bhima, but let me meditate like that Brahmana. You follow? You understand? So every day, while I was working and failing, I pictured that Radha Krishna and the gopis, like in Mayapur, you know, Radha Krishna and the Astasakis, that they were looking at the finished books. They were passing the finished books around between them, and they were laughing and enjoying them. And I had this picture in my mind constantly, the whole time I was working. All right, so over 3 years we did get help. People came forward with money, people came forward to volunteer. Altogether we ended up with 200 people internationally working on the project, translated it into 25 languages, got it fully illustrated by professional animators in China who were Tamal Krishnamurti's disciples. I mean, it became amazing. So we're there at the publisher in London, Nice Bengali man, Robin Datta. And he wasn't a devotee, nice Hindu man, right? And he had one devotee working in his company, but mostly non-devotees. So just some ordinary non-devotee, London, not Indian person, was designing the covers for the boxes of the books. And she got the idea, let me combine some illustrations from the books with photographs of children actually reading the books. That was her idea. We didn't discuss with her at all. And she brought in to show us. And what did she show us? She showed us for the cover, and this actually became the cover, some children reading the books. And we had one book, I Look for My Krishna, about Radha and Chitra looking for Krishna. And at one point they're looking at Krishna's footprints, and they're going like this, looking at Krishna's footprints. But on the cover they're going like this, looking at the books. So it was the picture I had in my mind for 3 years, manifested on the cover of this box as designed by a non-devotee in the London publishing house. And I looked at that and I thought, when we offer something like that, it's accepted. You follow? And it was a very wonderful experience for me, that the only way I could find happiness was to connect in this moment, in this moment, in this moment. And when the books were printed and the boxes were there, it was not any more or less of a celebration than it had been at every moment. So I was so happy when I saw that. This is the first time I've gotten to give class on these verses. And that these verses have been very important to me personally. And I see that they are really bring the essence of what is surrender and what is the relationship between the Lord and the devotee, and how we can actually live life with a thrill at every moment. So anything good from this class is from Srila Prabhupada, anything bad here is from me. I hope that you can please take the good and set aside the bad. So we have maybe like 3 minutes if there's one question. Yes, Frank.
You explained about Krishna enjoying the greatest one. Mm. Right, between Jiva and
what's going on.
Also, you were explaining that the best of the company presidents, they would want the ideas to come from the people.
Correct.
So, I have this question that, with the guna and karma which we have, and some endeavors which we put, so how, under what circumstances does it give a spiritual mellow to Krishna?
And what circumstances do we give what?
A spiritual mellow, spiritual rasa to Krishna. The guna and karma which we work with and guna which we endeavor, under what circumstances does it give a spiritual rasa to Krishna?
When you are following those 4 or 5 points from Prabhupada's letter to Jayapataka Swami. Under that circumstance. When you are seeing everything is part of Krishna's plan, whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. Let me do it with full attention to all detail, never mind what it is. Let me have my full concentration be on what I'm doing. Let all other circumstances, all other things be forgotten. and that my only Krishna's, my only, that Krishna's pleasure, my only desire for Krishna's pleasure be my only motive, something like that. I'm not getting the words exactly. That I see that Krishna has arranged that I'm in this place and in this time. Ultimately, Krishna arranges that I have these propensities and these, even if you can say it's from my past karma, still, Krishna's giving me these things to work for. I have some service to do with what I have, never mind how I have it. Let me pay attention to all detail. Let me be fully absorbed in what I'm doing. Forget everything else, and let my only motive be that Krishna will be happy by what I'm doing. Then Krishna's relishing what we're doing. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you.
And you feel that, actually. Do we have time? 9:14. Yes, one more.
Mataji, regarding the kind of absorption you are telling, like I have two things here. That absorption, is it like you are telling now, just being present? So is it possible at this stage, or it needs certain kind of purification when we reach that?
If non-devotee atheists can do that, you can. You just add the Krishna bit. The kind of things you want to wait for are trying to understand the intricacies of Radha Krishna Leela. You don't need to wait for things in Bhagavad Gita chapters 2 and 3. If we're looking at something in Bhagavad Gita chapters 2 and 3 and we're saying that's too advanced for me, then something's wrong. But it's a very common question. And you know, like we're talking about yes? Very basic things. Yes, you can do it now. And Krishna will help you. Krishna will help you. Bhagavad Gita 2:64, where Krishna says, how do you get out of this contemplating, attachment, lust, anger, bewilderment? He says you become detached from attachment and aversion, which is very much also talking about being in the now and focused, that I let go of this. I was just hearing this morning Prabhupada saying, hankering and lamenting. You regulate your senses, which also means you're using your nature in service. And then he says you get Bhagavad Prasad. So Vaisheshika Prabhu likes to chant 2:64 before prasadam because it says Bhagavad Prasad. But it doesn't mean samosas, actually. It means you get apyayam swena tejasa. You get the Lord's, you get help. What does Krishna say? Daivi esha gunamayi mama maya dharajaya mama eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Are we ever going to win the battle against maya ourselves? It's not going to happen. But we try to do the mental discipline and the physical discipline, and then Krishna helps us. Will we always be externally successful? Will we always be externally successful? No. Is it still a success?
Yes.
Yes. If we're in the proper consciousness and we're acting in Krishna's service, it's still a success even if we fail externally.
One more thing, Mataji, like
I'm going to get in trouble.
No problem.
Okay.
So sometimes when services are too pressing, we don't have time enough to contemplate on this, like moment to moment. We have many anxieties of completing some other services, or we may have many other responsibilities. So what is your practical suggestion or understanding?
Okay. So there's a book I recommended to all of the ISKCON leaders called The Power of Full Engagement, which is a really nice book about how to manage energies. Imagine that you got all the money for a month that you earned in cash. Okay, imagine it was actual physical cash. And you could make one envelope, you put in the cash you could spend on food, and in one envelope you put in the cash you could spend on clothes, another envelope you put in the cash you could spend on transportation. Okay, you clear? So you budgeted your money in these envelopes. So then when you were going to buy clothes for that month, you know that you could spend all the money in that envelope. And you didn't need to worry about, will I have money for food, because that's in another envelope. Is this a clear metaphor? Okay, now imagine this is energy. Not time, energy. We all have a certain amount of energy each day, and most of you probably have more per day than I have at this point in my life. But we have a certain amount of energy per day, and you can allocate different amounts of energy to different things. No matter how many pressing things you're doing, if you're working with that envelope of energy, you don't need to be in anxiety about the other things, because you know you have an envelope for those. And people have asked me, how do you do this? And I'm like, I don't know exactly, but I know that if you want to do this, you can. We have a sense of how much energy we have. And we have different amounts of different kinds of energies. Like, we each have so much energy per day for socializing, and so much energy per day for intellectual work, and so much energy per day for physical work. Also, make sure you don't take on things that are stressing you too much beyond what you can do. Yes? Prabhupada talks about this in Nectar Devotion. He talks about it with over-endeavoring. Don't take vows you can't complete. We're not God. You know, we're not like even Lord Brahma. We're just little Kali Yuga humans. We can't do a whole lot as a Kali Yuga human. And so be careful that, you know, you want to stretch yourself, you don't want to be lazy, but don't take on so much that you're overstressed and you're falling apart and your health falls apart and your physical health, your mental health, your sadhana falls apart. Yeah? But then you know, when I'm doing this thing, I'm giving this thing that my envelope of energy, and I have other envelopes for those other things. And make sure you do. Like, just as a very simple example of this, I notice that when I chant all my 16 rounds in the morning, I'm more tired at night than if I still have some japa to complete later in the day. Why? Because I've saved some of my japa energy, you follow? I've said, oh, I still have like 2 rounds that I have to finish. And so I've kept some energy for that. So then when I sit down and chant at 5 PM, I can pull from that energy. Does that make sense? Yes? The other thing is, if you're doing work that's according to your nature, that work will energize you. It will not deplete you. Now, we all have to sleep, no matter what we're, you know. I mean, even the Goswamis had to sleep for a couple hours. But we all have to sleep, we all have to eat, we all need breaks. Krishna says, the one who's temperate in eating, sleeping, working, and recreation can mitigate all pains by practice of the yoga system. Nobody can just go zoom, 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 zoom. Nobody can do that. That's not the way. Material nature is like this. It's not like this. And trying to do it like this is rajagun. So we have, you know, sometimes we're using physical energy, sometimes mental energy, sometimes intellectual energy. But if we're doing the right things, they will energize us. If we're doing our sadhana properly, our sadhana will give us energy. If we're doing work that's according to our nature for Krishna, we will feel energized. We'll feel like, oh, did I miss prasadam? You follow? Yes? Is that all right? That's a very simple answer. That could be a 2-hour class. Thank you very, very much. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.